Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
For the play-by-play call of the day, Matt was going to play somebody hitting a trash can. Seems a little bitter. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Care, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. All with great warranties. Great pre-owned inventory with the all-important Sunbury Motors guarantee and a great service department that backs it up. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day as this one heads toward Mission Valley.
Swung on his hit. Wow. Deep to right field. Titanic shot into the second deck. Wow. The Phillies take a 2-0 lead. Kyle Schwarber signals to the bullpen as he gets to second base. That was as long a home run as you're going to see here at Petco Park.
It's the longest ever at Petco Park. 488 feet to the upper deck. Destroyed that ball. They go with the Harper home run earlier. They made it 1-0, and the Phillies won it 2-0. Now, not a lot of time to celebrate. They've got to go right back out and play this afternoon, getting underway a half hour from now as they play with Blake Snell on the mound for the Padres and Aaron Nola, who's been dynamic down the stretch, on the mound for the Phillies in that one. Yankees and Astros play at 7:37, Justin Verlander against Jameson Taillon for Houston and New York, respectively. All right, let's bring in Mike DeCourcy, Sporting News, who had a sit-down with Kevin Warren, Commissioner of the Big Ten. Mike, always great to have you with us. Do we not have Mike?
We're going to try him on your end, I think.
I didn't know I had to do the whole show.
Technical difficulties on this end.
Well, if you'd stop celebrating all rise, maybe you know, no offense, but I mean,
get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
There are moments with the Yankees I feel like I'm dealing with Nick Sirianni jumping up and down after drawing a team offside. We became the first team ever to do it. We're the first team ever to do that. Really? Nick, no. Quietly pump your fist. Move on. I mean, my goodness. We did it. No, you really didn't. I mean, come on. Killing us. If that's your guy, that's your guy.
You, sir, are my hero.
I worry about some of the people that you know. You root for sometimes. I mean,
we did it. We drew them offside.
Nick, other teams have done that. Huh? Have you ever watched Aaron Rodgers quarterback? I could rack up a whole table of 200 of them.
Yeah, he might be pretty good at that.
All right, so here's Mike, one of the best in the business, and just a flat-out great guy, too. And that's Mike DeCourcy, Sporting News, also BTN. Mike, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Doing well, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great.
All right, so you had a sit-down with Commissioner Warren. And I'll give you my observation, then I want to hear what you think about it. I felt in July at Football Media Days, it was kind of a gung-ho move forward, you know, let's see what expansion holds and so forth. And I felt this time at Basketball Media Days, he was more measured. Your opinion on that opinion?
Yeah, I think that's correct. I think he wanted to come out of that feeling like, hey, if there's something else out there, and I think a lot of it was attached to, I really believe this, I think a lot of people construed it to be something else, but I believe this is just a personal opinion.
Sure.
I believe that 90% or more was oriented toward, hey, Notre Dame, man, now's the time.
Yes, I agree.
That, you know, the whole thing about Oregon and Washington is that, to an extent, bigger doesn't necessarily make you better. Better makes you better. Notre Dame makes you better. Football, whatever, basketball, whatever, but Notre Dame is Notre Dame. There's no doubting that. And who you'd get to if Notre Dame finally said this independent thing isn't for us anymore, and their attachment to that has always eluded me. And I know a lot of the people there, and I've spoken to a lot of the people, and no one's ever really been able to give me a good reason why they're so attached to it. But they are really attached to it. And I think that they were trying to convince Notre Dame that now was the time. But what's happening in the Pacific Northwest doesn't really do anything for them. If by some chance SC and UCLA decided that they were too isolated in the future, then there might be a sort of a catalyst for this to happen. But as of now, everything that I've been able to gather is they kind of like the idea of being able to be the only team on the West Coast in the Big Ten,
yes,
and that they don't really want anybody else to have a share of that.
Yes, and I've gotten the same impression that they, you know, everyone's like, oh, you're going to put them on an island. And like, have you asked them about it? Because I know in a couple people I've talked to, they kind of like the idea of being the lone wolves.
And I think the other thing that's overlooked, Steve, is that, you know, you might be able to get Ohio State to go along because Ohio State's thinking, man, we're stepping on all these people anyway, man. It doesn't matter how many you put below us.
Yeah.
If it puts a few more dollars in our pocket, fine. But I think that there's a feeling among a lot of the Big Ten membership that, okay, we got big and rich, and there's not that much richer out there. There's bigger, but there's not that much richer. So why would we want to go from being one of 16 to one of 18 or one of 18 or one of 20. There's value in exclusivity.
Yeah.
The Big Ten is the most exclusive club in sports. It really is. The SEC can make a case for it, but the Big Ten's case for exclusivity goes beyond what they do on the football field. It goes to a lot of different directions. And I don't know that, even though there are others out there who would fit your profile, why necessarily go out and expand and make that membership less exclusive?
There's another element, too, and you talk about bigger, and that is in terms of brand value. Now, look, Washington and Oregon, for example, are really good brands, so this is not any way of putting them down. But I don't think you want to look at the stage after negotiating a TV contract and look at Gene Smith, Pat Kraft, Ward Manuel, or even Rutgers or Maryland saying, you know, in order to get these guys in, you may have to take less money because there's only so much out there that people are willing to put in. The networks are not willing to put in more money unless they get a totally separate deal somewhere. People are going to have to take less if you were to bring in more potentially.
What I've tried to say since day one, when, you know, and I will not pretend like I saw SC and UCLA coming, but
none of us
did. From that point that went over the goal line, I've been saying, look, if there was more money out there for Washington and Oregon, then it would have been in this deal.
Yes.
And they're not in this deal.
That's right.
And I think there is a tension in continuing to push the narrative that the Big Ten is going to get bigger or that any conference is going to get bigger. But I've never seen the logic in that. And so I don't see the day in the near future when the Big Ten goes from 16 to beyond that. With the possible exception of Notre Dame waking up one day and saying, independent isn't working for us anymore. And I do think that day could be out there.
Yeah.
Because it's a slog for them to do this alone that others don't face. And I don't understand their appeal, but what if they get a new group of people in there at some point that says, this is not right, it's not working, it's not smart, why are we doing it?
Right. And I agree with that assessment completely. When you talk to Kevin Warren, and of course this is basketball media days, so the tournament has been in Indianapolis, Washington, Madison Square Garden, Chicago this year, then next year it goes to Minneapolis. Looking to the future, Los Angeles or Las Vegas? Could they be options for a Big Ten tournament because you have added USC and UCLA?
Yeah, I asked him specifically about that and used those two cities as a possibility. And he very much said yes. Now, he did not specify which. I think that it would be open to that. I think he probably would prefer to go all the way to L.A. to put it in their real backyard.
Yes.
And certainly they have the facility to do it in the Staples Center, and they'd only have to kick two teams out. You'd only have to kick them out for one weekend, so I think they could pull it off.
Well, I think you have to kick out three.
Who is the third?
The Kings. The Clippers.
Oh, the Kings play there as well. Yeah. I
didn't mean to correct you, but I mean...
You're right. You're right. I'd forgotten all about them playing there. So, yeah, you'd have to kick out three, but I think that could be accommodated for 4 or 5 days or whatever. I think they could pull that off. So I do think that there'll be a time when they do it. I don't know exactly when, but we got to New York. We got to D.C., and so I think it will get out to L.A. subsequent to the Trojans and the Bruins becoming members.
And he wants to, and everybody in the conference wants to make this integration happen as seamlessly as possible, because I don't think you can think about integrating anybody else seamlessly until you do this first. So any thoughts on his part as to how they can make it seamless? Because it's not just football and basketball. It's going to be 15 to 20 sports.
Yeah, some of the sports I don't think are problematic because, like cross country and that sort of thing. I mean, all right, that you could just, you just do an invitation or golf,
Sure. Yep.
That's not as big a deal those sports are certainly matter, but the scheduling is not as problematic in track, cross country, golf. Those sorts of sports are not that problematic. And I think some of it could also be in men's and women's swimming. It's, you can do a lot of the same things.
Yeah.
I think it brings you to baseball. I think that's where the issue becomes maybe most problematic. Soccer, men's and women's. Then you have to really worry about it a little bit. But the one thing I'll say, what you have to ask yourself is, does charter travel open up to those teams for those trips?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it will. I think that with the amount of money that they're bringing in now, that's over and above, far over and above what they had been making, I think you can afford to do that in those particular sports for charter travel for that West Coast trip. And I don't think that we'll see a day, and I sure hope not, where you jet out to UCLA and jet home. No, I mean, you're going all the way out there. You got to play them both.
Well, that's why I've talked on the show about, I think, block scheduling is an idea. In other words, you take your women's soccer team, your men's soccer team, you mentioned cross country, you take your volleyball team, bump one plane, fly them out, one hotel, weekend, two sets of whatever, bump, fly them back. Same thing with them coming east. I think if you block scheduling, it could end up not being as expensive as people think it can be.
Yeah, and I don't think the expenses is prohibitive now, because I mean they really are making a lot more new money than they were, and so charter travel is not cheap, but right. I think it's manageable for the number of trips that they would have to do it, and most of the men's and women's basketball teams are already doing this on a regular basis, so it just means a longer flight than was the case before.
Well put. In being around the media day, what was the impression you got of some of the teams there? What's your thought on the conference in a preseason look at this point?
Yeah, if you look at this, at what we've seen over the past 2 years, and I know a lot of people want to go back and look at the tournament performances that were not good and say, see, it was never that great to begin with. And the reality is they performed to the level that they did. You can't erase what happened. You can say, hey, they stunk in the tournament both years, and they did.
Yep.
And that's not inaccurate.
That's true.
But you can't rewrite what they did in the regular season. I don't think that that's going to be the case this year. It may be as balanced, but I don't think it will be as excellent. And I'm not sure that's necessarily bad for whichever teams can separate themselves, whether it's Indiana, Illinois, Purdue. I believe in Purdue more than some do.
Mm-hmm.
Whichever teams can separate themselves, if they can do that, it can be good for them. I did a thing on the day that the league really imploded in 2021 in the Indianapolis bubble when both Ohio State and Purdue went down. I started to look into it. If you look back, Steve, over time, the leagues that get the most bids usually struggle in the tournament. And I think it's because they have to work so hard and to become the best version of themselves to get through that every night or every other night grind and then do it again in the conference tournament, where you just have to become the best version of yourself and you don't build in a lot of flexibility. And then somebody comes out, it's like you learn how to hit the fastball and the slider, and then somebody comes out and starts Tim Wakefielding you with knuckleballs, and it's harder to adjust. And I think that's what we saw in the NCAA tournament. And I use this as an example. When Purdue got to St. Peter's in the NCAA tournament, and they didn't throw a knockout punch early, but in this early second half, early to mid-second half, Travion Williams came in and played great for a stretch of about 6 to 8 minutes and put St. Peter's in about a 6 or 8 point hole and just, you know, gassed himself by doing that. And it was at that point that Matt Painter should have said, okay, this whole Zach Edey thing, I love him, and he's going to matter to us again, but he's not playing tonight because he can't play in this game. He's shown it every time we put him out there. Mm-hmm. He just can't play against these guys, and he should have gone small. Whether it was with a completely small lineup or one Caleb First, the power forward he had available, he should have gone small. He puts Edey back out there, and the game goes right back down the toilet. And that's what happens when you're every night in a league like the Big Ten has been the last 2 years, having to play to your absolute best self to survive.
Because when I look at Houston's really good, all right? Gonzaga is obviously terrific. But there are games within their own conference. They don't have to spend themselves on an every-night basis to get there. There are key games where they have to, but not on an every-night basis.
Yes.
And the top teams in the Big Ten have to do that almost on an every night basis, as my viewpoint of it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the, you know, there are nights in the American Conference, especially at home. I think on the road, just about everywhere, you better play your best.
No doubt.
Or you're flirting with a problem.
Yep.
But when Houston's at home and they're playing one of the poor teams in their league, they know they can throw out a C effort and win. Mm-hmm. And Kelvin's not going to be happy with him. But there are times when players know, I don't have it tonight, he doesn't have it tonight. You know, we can't be great all the time, so let's just get this done, get it over with. And if he yells at us in practice tomorrow for not being right, okay, we'll live with that. But we just want to get the W and move along. And if you do that in the Big Ten, even at home, most of the time you're going to lose.
Well, that's what I always refer to as the great teaching moment, where, like, you get out there, you put together a C effort, you win the game. They can yell at you all you want the next day, but at least you're doing it from the power of, like, you won the game. So, Mike, it is always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Hopefully, we can talk a lot as the season goes along, because your perspective is always great.
Anytime for you, Steve. You bet.
Thanks, Mike. Again, no Yankee talk. I apologize. Feel awful about that.
It's okay. Honestly, it's okay.
I'm trying to do a refreshing show.
I'm always here for the people. You know that.
All you want to talk about is what you want to talk about. And now we're finding out nobody's interested. Matt Leon, next half hour. We're going to talk about the Phillies. Lots of Phillies talk. What do you think?
There should be.
Very defensive on your part. I'm worried about you.
I know. I always appreciate the concern.
Right. I think the next 5 days could put you over the edge.
Well, luckily I have Penn State football to keep me distracted for part of that stretch.
You're going to be on your... What, are they playing Saturday?
They're playing... The first pitch is 5:07 Saturday, and of course kickoff is 7:30.
You are going to be on your phone the whole time, right? You're going to hear... The crowd's going to be cheering. You'll glance up and go, hey, what's the score? Right? It's like... Oh, Judge struck out. The crowd's going crazy. Singleton just went 60 yards. And then we'll have to talk about it on Monday. And he'll go, honestly, I didn't see the play. Judge struck out.
I got my plan. I'm good.
Saturday is going to be a living hell for you. All right, we'll come back. More in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. You want a new vehicle with a great warranty? How about Ford, Kia, or Hyundai? Sunbury Motors has them all. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a fabulous service department to back it all up. We'll get to Matt Leon in just a moment. We know Matt is going through an emotional crisis right now. The Yankees are going to play Houston. He hates the Astros. He's driven more by hate than he is by the love of his own team. He's going to be at the Penn State game on Saturday night. He's going to have to, like, just, he's going to be on his phone the whole time, never even watching the game. Right? You know, kind of reminded me of that Family Guy episode where Peter wanted to become the $6 million man.
And I am going to run like the $6 million man.
We can rebuild it. We have the technology. But I don't want to spend a lot of money.
Yes, that is actually the theory of the entire organization. We can rebuild you, Matt, but we don't want to spend a lot of money. All right. Courtesy of Family Guy.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go to Matt Leon in Philadelphia. Sir, what a great time to be in Philly. Welcome to the show. Is this another one where I got to do all the work? You can answer yes or no. Do I have to do all the work? Evidently, I do. All right.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with this thing.
From Philadelphia, where they hope to go from being the city of brotherly love to the city of champions. What a role. What's it like in the city now?
It's uncomfortable because we don't know how to deal with nice things like this on occasion.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean,
it's really amazing. Like, the Eagles, in my opinion right now, are the best team in the NFC and arguably the best team in the NFL. And I don't think there's a team in the for baseball than the Phillies, and they are playing loose, they are playing having fun, they are playing to their strengths, and it is completely something that I don't think anybody really saw coming.
Which goes to the next element. The Eagles are not playing this weekend, it's a bye week, so everybody can concentrate on what's going on with the Phillies. We saw Wheeler's performance last night. Brilliant, but that's the way he pitched down the stretch. Nola's been even better down the stretch. What has kicked in for him as the veteran on that staff?
It's interesting because Nola kind of had the moniker that very good pitcher but couldn't win the money games. And probably unfair. He had a couple of high-profile bad games over the last few years in September that kind of carried that notion. To be fair, that was something this whole team struggled with. Like, this is a team that was in contention in 18 and 19 and 20. One of those years, I don't remember which one, they had to go, like, 2-8 in their last 10 to make the playoffs, and they went 1-9. Like, something to that. Like, they had to work really hard to miss the postseason. So it was not just him. It was a collective effort. And he was a little up and down in September, but it's interesting. Like, once it got to October, starting with the game that clinched the playoff spot. He has been lights out, and he's had command of all his pitches. He is pitching with enormous confidence, economical with his pitches, and you're what we have seen for the last three, four, five starts, however long it's been, is kind of top shelf Aaron Nola on a consistent basis. It's nothing we haven't seen before, but now we're seeing it start after start, and as the stage gets bigger and bigger.
I felt like I saw this from Cole Hamels in 2008.
Yeah. You know, because we're kind of to the point now where I don't want to say like matchups don't matter, but we're kind of like through the looking glass here. Like,
yeah.
Things don't necessarily need to make sense. Like, this person doesn't usually do this, but they might do it now. Like, you're just seeing this is a Phillies team that just kind of feels like it should win, expects to win, and you are seeing the results follow simply because it feels like that is what's supposed to happen. You know, every year, specifically in baseball, there's a team that gets that look to them, and you don't know who it is because it has nothing to do with their record or where they're seated or whether they won a division or a wild card. But there's just this team that when it's all said and done and you look back and you go, wow, they really came together. And, you know, it's not based on anything other than the vibes kind of fall in place. And I think the Phillies are that team. And it's interesting because you go back a decade, 2010, 2011, when the Phillies were clearly the best team.
Yep.
They fell victim to a Giants team. They fell victim to a Cardinals team.
Yep.
That, you know, if you're a baseball fan and you pay attention, they were clearly better than that team. You would take that Phillies roster over that Giants roster, you know, 95 out of 100 times.
No doubt.
But it didn't make any difference in a short series. Things just started to roll. The Giants and the Cardinals started to play like they thought that they deserved to be there, and that it was their turn. And now you're seeing it happen with the Phillies, but in a positive way for the Phils.
We all know Harper's influence on what's going on with the team, and Boehm has done really well. I mean, there's a long list of guys that have. What has the presence of Schwarber meant? And I don't just mean that big bat that can hit it 488 feet. What has his, quote, presence meant and the fact that he's been through this before?
It means a lot. And I also think after what round, it might have been after they clinched the playoff spot, but Rob Thompson said that, you know, Kyle Schwarber was the best clubhouse presence he's ever been around.
Yep.
And, you know, for a guy that's, you know, you're talking about a baseball lifer in Thompson, and for him to say something like that kind of speaks to what the importance of Schwarber is. And I think it's partly that experience you talk about, because the Phillies have a lot of guys that get paid a lot of money, but they don't have a lot of guys that have experience in games like this. You know, I mean, the top half of this roster are guys that, you know, that was kind of one of their bugaboos, is people said they didn't know how to win. And I think Schwarber's helped with that experience, but it seems like, and like I said, I'm not down in the clubhouse, so I don't, but from all accounts, it really just seems like Schwarber is exactly what this group needs, pushing them in the right direction, along with Thompson, who has just done a phenomenal job. You know, and I'm so glad they took the interim off of that and gave him the contract extension. Because he's been incredibly important to this as well. But Schwarber has meant a lot. And I mean, that home run he hit last night, I mean, you're just in awe of that. Like, that almost seemed like he was teeing off a golf ball. Like, to see a ball hit like that, that's special.
No upper deck, it's in Mission Valley, where the old ballpark used to be.
I mean, just amazing.
Yeah. And the bull, you know, like in postseason, it happens in the regular season, but in the postseason, there's a greater premium on what buttons you push in the bullpen. It looks like the buttons that they're pushing in the bullpen, they're working because the players are making it work.
Yeah.
This is not the Philly bullpen of 2 years ago.
No, and it really is amazing, because Sir Anthony Dominguez was a guy who showed a lot of flashes a couple years ago. Then he'd been hurt, and he'd been hurt for a long time. And I think a lot of casual fans kind of forgot about him or figured he wasn't in the organization anymore because it had been like a year and a half or so. And Jose Alvarado was sent to the minors early this season.
Right.
Like, and to his credit, whatever he figured out, he fixed himself down there. And I think he's kind of the key because the bullpen was better this year, but Alvarado not just coming back and being able to throw strikes, but becoming a lights-out guy. And a lights-out guy that can – he's not your typical lefty that just comes in to shut down like a left-hander in a key spot. Mm-hmm. You know, he's getting an inning, if not an inning plus. Like, he can get anyone out and do it consistently. And he's really – I consider him kind of the Phillies closer because I feel like – he is going to get the highest leverage situation, whether that's right. in the sixth inning, the right. eighth inning, the ninth inning. Like, he's the guy that when they absolutely need somebody to get somebody out, he's going to be the guy. But you couple him with Dominguez, because it's funny, like last night, and I get it, a lot of people were upset that Thompson took Wheeler out of the game. And then you watch Dominguez just toy with the Padres in the eighth inning. I mean, it was like he was, you know, he was throwing a golf ball up there. They were just the movement, and they had no – they couldn't catch up to anything, and he just made it look so effortless. And when you've got, like, you know, in a short series, if you've got two or three guys that just absolutely are lights out at this point, and you can shorten a game to, like, five, six innings where the other team has legitimate chances to score or take the lead – that's incredibly, incredibly important. And when the Phillies won the World Series in 08, one of the reasons they did is that the year Lidge was perfect. Mm-hmm. They had Ryan Matz and they had J.C. Romero. If they had the lead after the sixth inning, the game was over. Mm-hmm. Like, that, you know, it. And I think knowing that if opponents get tighter because they know that every at-bat early in the game is magnified, so you maybe have some guys that try too hard and get in their own way because you already, even in the first, second inning, you kind of feel like time's running out, and let alone when you're facing a guy like Wheeler who was just in absolute control and dominant. But it's really amazing to watch this kind of come together because you can just tell this is a group that absolutely expects to win at this point. And you're watching a team that is playing like they've been here the last 10 years, and it's really been a fun ride.
So let's go across the parking lot because that team expects to win.
Yeah.
And to me, what impressed me on Sunday night was when they lost some control of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because Dallas is coming back, and now it's 20-17. That offense went on a march and got a touchdown, all right? And they did it in such a way where it was demoralizing to Dallas. What did it tell you about the Eagles in that moment?
I think they did the exact same thing the week before in Arizona. Little different circumstances because the game was tied, and they got the ball with whatever it was, 10.5 minutes, and the same thing. We are just going to shove it down your throat, and we can almost tell you what's coming, and you will not be able to stop it. And I think that's what is demoralizing about it, is they kind of go back to basics and just run the football for the most part. A couple pass plays, but it is the last two have been drives where it's been done running the football. And when you can do that running the football, you know, the passing game is fun, and that's what gets the highlights, but the running game is physical, and you use the word demoralizing. When you do that to a team 6 minutes, 7 minutes, 8 minutes, and you're getting to third and one, and you're converting again, and it's got to start all over, and the clock's running, and they're already thinking timeouts when there's 8 minutes left because they see the way this thing is going, and it changes the way you approach the whole thing. That's what winning teams do. I think it sends an incredible message, and I think last week, the week against Arizona, that was eventually the game-winning drive. They had the lead here, but to your point, I think the Dallas drive was even more impressive, number one, because of who it was against, but because they had kind of lost control of the game. Dallas had scored I don't know if it was back-to-back possessions, but they had scored the 2 second-half touchdowns. And you really kind of had that feeling like, man, if they go three and out, or if they turn it over and Dallas gets the ball here, I do not like the chances that they're going to be able to suddenly stop them. So with everything going against them, to just kind of buckle it up and go right at them and take their lunch money and make them like it, I think it's what championship teams do. And it's really, really impressive in real time, because you can almost physically feel the momentum turn in the moment as you're watching the drive come together.
They obviously have invested in offense by drafting a Devontae Smith and trading for Brown. But they've also invested a lot in that defense. They had 3 picks on Sunday night. What are you seeing from Jonathan Gannon's defense?
I think they've got, it's probably the best secondary of my lifetime for the Eagles. They've had other years where they probably had maybe one player that was a higher level, but I mean, top to bottom, they've got guys in that secondary, and Darius Slay doesn't get enough credit for how good he is. And when you just watch him play and you watch some of the film highlights, the way he knows how to play the position, he's not just a great athlete. The things he does with leverage and forcing guys to be uncomfortable and breaks on the ball. And I think James Bradbury would be a number one corner on about 20 teams in this league.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to kind of get him, because for whatever reason the Giants didn't want him,
Confused.
So you've got those two guys. It just allows, when you've got two guys on the corner, that you can trust, that are going to do their job and do it well, it just opens up the entire defensive playbook to what you can do, because you don't have to help these guys. And, you know, the safeties are very good. The kid they got from New Orleans that had the 2 picks on Sunday, another guy they got like a week before training camp, and got him for a song and plug him right in, probably not a Pro Bowler, but a high-level NFL player. And the linebackers, they've got playmakers at linebacker. I still think the ceiling's higher for the defensive line. If I had one kind of criticism, I think the pass rush is a little inconsistent.
Yep.
And it shouldn't be for the talent level they've got there. But I just think one of the things about this whole roster with the Eagles is they don't really have a weakness when healthy. Like, you know, guys get banged up, that's a different story. But when healthy, they don't have a position, in my opinion, that you point to and go, well, they really need an upgrade there. I mean, everybody would love to have all pros at every position. But they've got legitimate guys that you're like, you know what? In a salary cap era, I don't know that you're going to do much better than who they've got X, Y, and Z at that place. And this is able to happen because Jalen Hurts is on a rookie contract. So they can overspend at the other positions because you don't have that chunk of, you know, the salary cap that the quarterback's taken up.
Yeah, that's the Russell Wilson model. Wilson was a third-round pick, Hurts a second-round pick, and they're on that contract, which gives you flexibility. And not to be left out, 5-0, homecoming coming up, beat Columbia 34-14. Franklin Field, Saturday, Yale, 1 o'clock, the Quakers of Penn.
Yeah,
cannot
be fun.
Cannot be left out.
No, and I think it's going to be the toughest matchup of the year. Yale's given them fits offensively the last couple seasons.
Yeah, Yale struggled with Bucknell last week. I was surprised with that.
Yeah, and I don't know. Yale's the one team I haven't seen in person. I've seen everybody else on TV or obviously called the games.
Yeah.
Yale, just for whatever reason, they haven't been featured on ESPN yet, or you know, I've missed. But I can tell you, like, the last couple games that were both up at the Yale Bowl, Yale offensively did basically whatever they wanted. But Penn scored points but couldn't quite keep up with what Yale did. But I think you can kind of throw this defense that the Penn's always had a pretty good defense the last few years under coordinator Bob Benson, but it's at a different level this year. And I would be surprised if Yale has nearly the success. But it should be really good. I mean, it's interesting. The Ivy, you got 4 teams that are 2-0 that are going to fight for the championship. You got 4 teams that are 0-2 that, for all intents and purposes, are eliminated from the title championship, just because I think 2 losses hasn't had gotten a piece of the title since, like, Reagan's first term. you know, but this will be kind of the weekend, because Harvard plays Princeton, Penn plays Yale. Yep. We'll really get a feel for what this is going to look like down the stretch. And, you know, you just want to – you want to get to know, in my opinion, with the Ivy League, you want to get to November playing games that matter. If you can do that, you've had a good season. Obviously, if you win the title, you would have a great season. But the first step is playing, you're getting those final three games, which are all, almost the way the calendar falls, always in November, still in play for a title, and you kind of go from there.
Well, it'll be well announced. I know that.
Thank you.
Matt, thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
We've turned this into a Yankee free zone. We had to. We're just trying to get the audience back. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.